Greetings, everyone. Thank you for joining us. Good to see you. And here we are. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and it's Thursday, May 1st, May Day, in 2025. This is our first Thursday of the month meditation gathering. Call it sometimes a satsang, gathering of truth seekers. And so thank you for joining us, everyone. We're going to go ahead and jump right in. We don't delay here on this at all. As you know, this is a maximum of 1 hour, and it's primarily meditative. So we'll start right out with our guided meditation. Then we can open it up for any thoughts, feelings, concerns, joys, celebrations, whatever that you may have to share with us. So we're back home, as you know, probably here in Northern California. I'm looking out. It's a really nice view. I can maybe show you. I can show you the view. It's, I don't know if you can see that, but anyway, I'm looking out over the lake and some mountains. Nice to be back. All right, so let's go ahead and start our meditation. Well, like I say, I like to just jump right in here and get started. Such a beautiful day today here in Northern California, and I'm sure wherever you are as well. And that piece we just heard was that was called Lamb Song from the album Animal Songs. This earth with rest us, Lord, their presence. Free living wild animals who have blessed us by their presence. Always in harmony. every exhalation, radiate compassion, knowing that compassion encircles the earth. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for joining together in our time of meditation. It's great to see you all, and this is our time. We have together on the first Thursday of every month to connect more deeply with the inner work that we're doing, and as well as what we're doing in the outer world. So let's see here. Does anyone have any question or comment about anything that's happened in the past month? I'm happy to address any questions or concerns you have. And I'm also happy to give share a few of my thoughts as well. So just feel free as we're going along, if you'd like to make a comment or whatever. I think down at the bottom there's something, what's it called? You know what it is. I think, what is it? React. You can raise your hand or just raise your hand or whatever. So I'd like to let a few more people in here. I'd like to talk a little bit about a few things. You know, one thing that I really appreciate, actually, is the fact that Dr. Gabriel Cousins and I are doing something on the third Wednesday of every month, I think it is. And it's based on the Sevenfold Path of Peace from the Essene tradition, which I'm familiar with. I studied way, way back, a long time ago, with someone called Danan Perry, who started the Earth Stewards Network. And that was one of the reasons I went to Russia and also to the Ukraine back in 1990 and then again in 1991, I think it was, or 92. And we were working to create peace in the world. And so the Essenes are, as you probably are aware, are very interesting people who lived in what is today Israel, in that area, a long time ago. And they were, a lot of people say that Jesus and his family and so forth, those people, they were Essenes. They may have been influenced by Pythagoras or the Buddhist teachings. Apparently they were vegetarians, or what we probably vegans, and didn't own slaves, and you know, had quite a few, lived a very spiritual life. And so the Sevenfold Path of Peace is something I studied back in the Earth Stewards. And Danan and I, he had the idea, Gabriel and I, Gabriel had the idea to sort of structure our monthly meetings on the Sevenfold Path of Peace. So peace with the body. And the whole idea is, I'll just say this at the beginning, is that vegan living is really an essential foundation for all seven of these. Peace with the body. We talked about that in, I think it was in March. And the whole idea, of course, is that if we're eating violence and suffering and misery, and not only eating it, but causing it, taking it out of our wallet and paying for it, then we're causing harm to other beings that's not necessary, and it boomerangs back to us. Gabriel talked quite a bit about the idea that if we're trying to raise our kundalini, right, or our energy, it's very difficult to do that if we're eating meat or dairy products or eggs. So the whole idea is to create a physical body, a vehicle that is a good instrument for our spirituality. And this is very important. I mean, I can't overestimate this. There's nothing, in a way, this is one of the most important things to understand, which is that we really have to be proactive and take responsibility for the quality of the health of our body. And a foundation of that is an organic, whole, plant-based way of eating and living. And I'm kind of a little bit dismayed to see that so many very unhealthy foods are now parading themselves as being vegan. All these genetically engineered and so forth. I won't go into it, but it's a lot of people are going vegan now and saying, man, I was so sick when I was a vegan. I ate all this vegan food. It's in the vegan section. But now I'm so glad I'm not a vegan anymore because all that toxic food was too much. I mean, I can't believe it. When I went vegan back in the 80s, all you could eat was rice and beans and vegetables, and we were healthy because we were eating real food. But the idea that our body and our mind are not separate. So then last month in March, we talked, excuse me, in, no, earlier this month, yeah, last month, in April, we talked about peace with the mind. And again, it's critical. I mean, when you're, like when I was a Zen Buddhist monk in Korea, I was living in a monastery that had been practicing vegan living for 750 years, as you probably are all aware of that. I've mentioned that. So people have understood this for hundreds of thousands of years, that if we're serious about having a mind that's at peace and in harmony and so forth, that, again, eating animal foods, causing suffering to others, it just creates an undercurrent of guilt, I would say, at some, you know, basic level, a healthy sense of guilt. I mean, we should feel badly if we're harming other living beings. But also, I think, a real unwillingness to kind of go more deeply into our life. Because if we, as soon as we start going more deeply into our life and our actions, we hit this wall of, well, I don't want to think about that, right? I don't want to think about if I say to someone, would you like to know how your bacon was made? They usually say, no, I want to enjoy my bacon. Don't tell me how it was made. I don't want to know. I don't want to think about it. And so the universal will then go along with that. And so we don't know. We just start to stay, we just end up staying shallow, and we never make any progress spiritually. So going vegan doesn't mean that we'll definitely make progress spiritually, but it means we can. You know, I have the image in the World Peace Diet of a boat. And if we're in a boat and we're trying to go across a lake and we have a motor or we're rowing or whatever it is, and we're trying to, and we can make certain progress, but if we have a rope attached to our boat that's attached to the dock, at a certain point we can't go any farther. That's what eating meat is. It's like a rope attached to the dock and dairy and eggs. But if we undo the rope, in other words, if we go vegan, that means we can at least go across the lake, right? We could, but it doesn't mean we will. We could if we put our mind to it. The problem is, and I've discovered, and so many people take up a vegan practice out of compassion for animals or out of health or whatever, and they just don't go anywhere, it seems like, from the point of view of the inner work. Of spiritual work, it's a whole different thing in many ways. So it's really important, I think, more than ever, for us to understand the importance of the outer work and the inner work, that they go together, they feed each other. And then the third one is the family, and peace with the family. And this is really a big one. And so one of the main points, of course, is that if we're raised in a family that's vegan, which none of us were, but if we were, I think that tends to create a foundation of peace and harmony and health and so forth. Most of us weren't, but hopefully we can create families in the future that are that way, or we can bring veganism to our family, and that seems to be one of the very hardest things to do. One of the biggest questions people have, and like when Madeline and I travel around, we give all these lectures all over the country, all over the world. People very often want to know, well, what about my kids, my grandkids, my parents, my brothers, my sisters, you know, all these people. We would like them to go vegan because we love them. We don't want them to get cancer and heart disease, and we don't want them to be paying for animals to be slaughtered. And don't you understand? Those are the ones we most want to have go vegan, but they're very often the ones that absolutely won't do it. So peace with the family, I think, is a really big question to dive into, and how do we navigate those waters, especially from a spiritual point of view. And I think come to over all these years of doing my best to try to help my family members, for example, question eating animal foods, is just patience and loving kindness and not trying to change them, you know, just doing just planting seeds, keep planting seeds, but in a way that's not judgmental. So it usually means using I statements, saying, I discovered this, I'm so glad about, you know, focusing on the positive dimension of that. And I've seen some really difficult situations, especially when people have children that are not vegan, and then their grandchildren are not vegan, and they really want their grandkids to be vegan. That can be really a challenge. But there's there's a lot we can do. I'll just say this. A lot we can do through inner work, through, I would say, prayer and meditation. There's a practice, like one example is the Hawaiian teaching of Ho'oponopono, where we say, I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you. You know, this idea that we don't try to change other people. We just try to bring our own consciousness into a place of humility, of peace, of harmony, of caring, and just take responsibility for our actions and our thoughts, and know that we're not responsible for other people. That's their responsibility. But we are responsible for how we respond to them, right? That's the key. So there's tremendous latitude for a lot of creativity in that. So that's something I wanted to emphasize with family. Then the fourth one is peace with our community. And this is something else. You know, when I lived in Sanglongsha, I lived in Tibetan Buddhist meditation centers and Zen Buddhist meditation centers and various community, like places where you just live in a community. I lived at the farm in Tennessee, also a community. And so in our society, we don't live so much. We live in communities, but not the way people did in the old days so much. It's kind of sad, I think. I mean, the fabric of our culture is so fragmented by technology that very often we don't know who our neighbors are that live right across the street or right down the street or whatever. And so we have these other communities. We have communities like we have right now, you know, online communities or maybe temporary communities or intermittent communities like Veg Fest or like monthly gatherings online or monthly potlucks. We have a monthly vegan potluck here in Hidden Valley Lake. So we have a community that gets together on the first Sunday of every month. And we have all these different types of communities. And in earlier times, people really lived. They knew everybody in the village, everybody in the tribe, everyone in the neighborhood, whatever it was. It was much more integrated. And so the idea is that veganism can help bring harmony to the community, and that's so important. And again, it kind of reflects what we've been talking about already. When we have peace in our body, and peace in our mind, peace in our family, we work on these things through inner peace, then we can have peace in our community. And then the next one, there's only three left, the peace and with all cultures. So that's basically world peace, you know, peace among human family, which is something that's so important nowadays, it seems more than ever, that we somehow rein in the technology of destruction, which is really diabolical at this point, and treat each other with kindness and respect. And so that this is, again, founded upon, as I wrote in the World Peace Diet, it founded upon our relationship with animals, because if we're living in a culture that's slaughtering and destroying the lives and harmony and health and happiness of millions of animals every single day, we're just sowing the seeds for a war for ourselves, because we're forcing a war on these poor animals. And then, so that's important. And then the second to last one is peace with the earth, with ecology, with the environment, with this planet. And of course, I don't have to go into that. We all know that animal agriculture is devastating. But it's not only the practice of animal agriculture, it's the attitude underlying it, of being fundamentally separate from, superior to, dominate and exploit other living beings. And that's totally fine, because we're somehow special and we can do that. So veganism is really, to me, is about minimalism and about humility and about coming back into harmony with nature, with animals, with our true nature. It's really fundamentally a spiritual practice, but it's a grounded spiritual practice. We're thinking about how we live on the earth, how the repercussions of our lives radiate out into the infinite web of relations. And so it's a fantastic thing. I mean, really, going vegan is such a great blessing on all these six levels we've talked about so far. But it's important to follow up with that, I think, to not just go vegan and then not do the inner work. If we don't do the inner work, then so much is missing. And then finally, the seventh one is, the Essenes call it peace with God, and I think maybe you could use that, or peace with the truth of being, however we conceive that to be. And this is probably the most important one. Like I say, several of my books, I think our spiritual connection is by far the most important thing, because out of that, everything else flows. If we don't have peace with the source of our being, if we don't have a sense of kinship and connection with our true nature, then everything else is going to be very difficult. And again, I think the problem is we've been born into a culture where from the time we're little kids, we're compelled, really without our permission, to eat and tortured animals, and that this basically pollutes our connection not only with animals and the earth and our family and our community and our body and our mind, but also with the source of all life. We're violating the basic, like the Ten Commandments or the Ten Precepts in Buddhism or whatever they are, the rules that have been given to not cause unnecessary violence. And, we're violating ahimsa. And as Judy Carmen, who's with us, hi, Judy, points out that, we are trying to birth, in a sense, a new species, Homo ahimsa, which is really, I think, what we already are. Our true nature is loving kindness and compassion for others. But we're, again, it's not like we're terrible people that just want to kill animals and each other. We're born into a culture with an obsolete food orientation. And we can basically question that, and that's not enough. I mean, that's great to go vegan, but we need to go beyond that to understand the deeper spiritual and psychological and emotional components to this whole thing and do the inner work. So ultimately, I think that we're assured of a victory. I mean, my basic feeling is that, and I guess this is just something I'll just throw out there, is that it's really helpful to look in terms of multiple incarnations, because if we only think of, like, this is it, then things get really confusing. But when we understand that we're planting seeds now for the future, always. And we can always look ahead to, if we want to know the kind of past we've had, we can look at the present we have. If we want to know the kind of future we're going to have, look at the present we're making, right? So the present is the great gift. It's the present. And we have the power every moment to sow seeds of joy and freedom and liberation and creativity and kindness. Right? Every moment we have that option. And we are. We are sowing seeds no matter what. Whatever our thoughts are, thoughts, words, and deeds, we are sowing seeds. So to really kind of understand that and then see that as a blessing, that we have tremendous capacities to contribute and to question things. So I think we're in a great time. I mean, we're going through massive political and economic and environmental challenges, divisiveness, all kinds of things are happening. And in many ways, I think it's the fruit, really, in many ways, of the seeds we've sown of 10,000 years of animal agriculture. We have a lot of conflict right now in the outer world. But underlying that, I feel there's an awakening, and there's a lot of good things happening. One thing I wanted to mention, by the way, maybe I'll mention it again on the third Thursday, but there's kind of a neat thing that connects with the peace with the body, the first one. I heard about from some friends of ours, their name, Ryan and Tatiana. We met them in Florida. We've known them a couple of years. They're really, they're younger than us. They're probably in their 30s, 40s, and they're really athletic. He's a surfer, and they're super athletic people. They do all kinds of exercise and everything. And they told us about something called Don't Die. Do you know about Don't Die, that app? Don't Die, D-I-E. I just think it's really interesting. So because they told us about it, and basically what it is, it's a guy. His name is Brian Johnson, I think, and he's a pretty smart guy and worked in corporate America for quite a few years, and then had a lot of health problems, and decided he was going to really get healthy, and so he started doing all this research, and he's really like manic. He just got manic. He said he is the most scientifically tested human being on planet Earth. He's had every possible test of his blood and everything about him. And he's made it a project to try to find out how to really be healthy for a long time, up into old age, so-called old age, and just to be healthy all the way through. So he says we have two types of age. We have our chronological age, which is how old we are depending on when we were born, right? So I was born in 1953, so here I am, I'll be 72. And he said, but we also have a biological age. And he said, that's basically dependent on what you're eating and how much you're exercising and just how you're living your life. And the good news is that there are countless ways that we can increase our decrease our biological age. We can be much healthier if we actually understand things. And so he has this test on this. If you get the app, if you go on your phone, just get the app. It's called Don't Die. And so I got it. I thought, I'm going to try this out. So he has this test. You can see your biological age. But we all know our chronological age, but we can go and see our biological age. And there's just seven tests. You just do these seven tests, and then the app gives you your biological age. So I thought, all right, I'm going to try that, you know. And so so the seven tests are this is what they are. Number one is how many consecutive push-ups you can do. So it's kind of a strength, like just, you know, and you have to do them like all the way down, like touch your nose to the floor and up. And then, and that's hard, especially for women. But anyway, that's number one. Number two has to do with balance. How long you can stand on one foot with your eyes closed. That's not that easy. That's number two. Number three has to do with flexibility. It's you know how you in yoga you touch your toes. That's like one of the if you keep your legs straight and then you bend over and you touch your toes. Well, you do that on the floor. Try to touch your toes, and then you measure. You put a ruler there and see how many inches. If you're 3 inches, you can't before you reach your toes, or 3 inches past your toes, or whatever. You just see what it is. So that's number three. It's just how flexible you are that way on touching your toes. Number four, these are things that he's been researching this, and there's hundreds of thousands of people are going through this program. So it's like he's really refined it. It's very interesting. But these things really seem to be apparently valid through all the research that he's been doing all these years. The fourth one, what's the fourth one? The fourth one is this the ratio of your height in inches to your waist in inches? And so that's number four. Number five is you're standing up, and you have to cross your ankles and sit down. And if you can sit down, and then when you're sitting down, then you have to stand up again with your ankles crossed without using your hands. So but most people can't do that. So if you have to use your hand one time or two times, so you give the number, like how many times you had to use your hand. Some people can just do it without using, and you know, just sit down and get up without. But that's apparently a very good indicator of your youthfulness. All these are basically for youthfulness. If you can sit down and stand up without using your hands. Of course, my desk, everything is on the floor, so I'm always sitting down and standing up. So I'm good at that one. And then this last two. One is hand grip strength. So you have to buy on Amazon one of those things where you can squeeze it and see how many pounds you have. And I had already bought one of those a couple of years ago because I was curious. So that one, you just see how many pounds your grip is. And then the last one is reaction time. Yeah, reaction time. So you have to. So there's a little app you get, and you hold your finger on it, and it does these five little balls come on, and it's how quickly you can react when the light goes out. How quickly you can release your finger. So those are the things. It's reaction time. It's strength. It's balance. It's flexibility. And anyway, so I just invite everyone to try it out. I tried it out. I don't know if I should tell you what my age is. My biological age. Well, Madeline's biological age, I was impressed, and I think it's better than that. But she got, I shouldn't say how old she is. Well, she's a little older than me. She's like 5 years older than me. I just told her. Anyway, her biological age was 35. I thought that was pretty impressive. And mine, I'll tell you what mine was. Mine is 22. Woohoo! You know, but I thought, you know, And it's so funny because you hear people say, oh, those vegans, you know, when they get old, you know, they all fall apart because they don't get enough protein. They don't get this and that and the other. And it's like, so ridiculous. So I thought, you know, longtime vegans, we should all do this test and prove to the world that we're younger than our biological age. And I mean, we're younger than our chronological age. Our biological age is younger. Because I think, but you know, the thing is, we have to be proactive, or it's not going to work, right? I mean, I've been proactive doing yoga and running around, doing exercise and meditating, all that stuff. But I think all of us can do that. And so I think it's a good thing that he's doing. He's giving people the opportunity to kind of think about these things. And also, he's got these groups that have, I guess, spontaneously formed in cities all over the world where people get together in the Don't Die group, and they take walks in the mountains, and they take swims, and they do this and that, and they call it encourage each other to be healthier. Because I really do think that we're way too disconnected from nature and from community and from our health, and bringing the vegan thing in. And the funny thing is, you know, I was wondering, well, is this guy, is he a vegan who invented this whole thing? And because he's researched everything, and it turns out he actually is. Yeah, he doesn't talk about it that much, I don't think. But he just says, well, you know, I just looked at the science, and that's the best thing. You know, you just don't eat any animal food. So he's not really preaching veganism, but he's kind of creating a context where it comes in the back door. If people really want to, you know, be healthy and live a long life, a healthy long life. It's not that great to live a long life if you're miserable and sick. You know, who wants to do that? But if we're, you know, if we're vibrant and feel great in the morning and all that, you know, why not stay here a little longer to enjoy the world? So I think it's a neat thing, actually. So I just wanted to share that with everybody and see if you'd like to give it a whirl. So let's see. Does anyone have any thoughts or questions about anything? I did want to mention one thing. Did I want to mention? Andy, it's good to see you. You're back. You came in a little late, but thanks. You had mentioned last meeting, I think it was, the problem you had with when you meditate, you see images of animals being abused, because we all seen these terrible videos of animals being abused. And that's a very interesting question. I was kind of thinking I should address that. What I basically encouraged was, I said, well, don't close your eyes and leave your eyes open. And that's true. I mean, there's a whole movement, I mean, a whole tradition in the meditation world of open-eyed meditation, because anyway, the mind, if we close our eyes, the mind tends to make little movies and we kind of go off on tangents. So a lot of people find it's easier for them to meditate with the eyes open. Although I think, personally, I can go deeper with the eyes closed. So, you know, maybe eyes closed is better. But also, I think, what do I say about this? I think some of us are very sensitive to these horrible images that undercover activists take, you know, capture. And I feel for myself that if they go to all this trouble to capture this video footage of cows and pigs and chickens and so forth being abused, at least I can watch it. At least someone should be a witness, and I'll see it, and I'll do my best to send love to these poor animals and try to hold the whole situation in my consciousness and be aware of what's happening. I like to just really like to know. But I've realized there are some people, because I can do that, and I'm not haunted by it later, really. I don't feel like it haunts me. I feel like I know it's happening, but I don't dwell on it. But I know some people, it just goes in, and it's like a trauma that just, really, it's hard. It's devastating. So I would say, you know, if you're a vegan and you're aware of this, like, don't watch those videos. I mean, try just, you know, you don't have to. You don't have to, like, put yourself through that. And the other thing is to try to also balance it. And maybe that's part of what helps me also with images of animals being happy and celebrating, and just, you know, take time to see the birds flying around, and you know, I know you walk dogs. You know, there's so much beauty and love and yeah. and celebration and so forth in the animal kingdom or queendom, whatever it is, to kind of allow those things to fill your consciousness, because there's no shortage of horrible images going into our society. I mean, through the media, and we don't, and it is traumatic. I mean, it's too bad that we have to have that, but. If it's in there, then I think it's good to try to do the best we can to dwell on positive images and be proactive in doing that. So I don't know if that's helpful. But,
thank you. Thank you so much. And I apologize for being late. I'm going to have to listen to the recording of this afterwards. But, you know, it's interesting. Yeah, me trying to sit and meditate, I mean, I don't even have to be meditating. I can be anywhere. I can be in a grocery store, anywhere, and suddenly those horrific images just show up in my brain. And and it's just drives me nuts. But as far as meditating, I realized this morning, you know, when I finish at a client's home, very often I'll vacuum. And I know this sounds weird, but I feel like it is the most, and I'll have music in the background. I love vacuuming and I love cleaning. And it's just like, I wonder if this is what people feel when they're meditating. I mean, it's so ridiculous, but it's relaxing. It's just, I'm physical. So I'm able to be physical. That sitting still drives me nuts. But the being physical, and yes, walking dogs really, really helps. Being with animals that are happy and healthy, it's the greatest, like, healthy escape. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it's thank you for remembering that. But, yeah, it does. It feel, and I'm very grateful to hear what you think about it. So when you experience seeing these horrific things, you send them love and, you know, you try to experience it. But, yeah, because my concern is if I'm like just feeling traumatized all the time and angry, I take it out on the world, and that's not going to turn other people into vegans when I'm screaming at them. So anyway, I'm always so grateful to hear your viewpoint. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah. Yeah. Those are all good points. And I think, you know, the most important thing really is finding a meditative. If you just can't stand sitting still, meditative activity. You know, like you say, vacuuming, cleaning. When I was at the Tibetan Buddhist Center, the Lama used to tell us that we should do cleaning as a meditation. He said, you know, you can sit and meditate, but clean your room, clean the bathroom, clean the toilet. He said, you should clean the toilet. You know, you should be willing to do anything that you think is disgusting. It's not disgusting. You know, clean and think of it as you're doing it, that you're cleaning your mind. You're cleaning your mind. You're cleaning the world. You're cleaning your consciousness. And he encouraged people to get a job as cleaners. He said, getting a job as a cleaner is one of the best jobs you can ever have. You know, clean people's houses. It's a really great thing. So thanks for that. We don't have too much
so
time.
Much I wanna... for that. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I was going to say, because I clean everywhere I go, and I love cleaning, and I clean all the public toilets I go to. I clean them everywhere.
Yeah. I know, we do too. In fact, today, Madeline and I spent the whole morning cleaning all the windows in the house. You know, we do that every – it's our spring cleaning, you know, and it's such a great thing. It just feels great to clean. I love it. We have – of course, I'm married to a Swiss. Everything has to be – you know, super clean, which I appreciate. Okay, I think we have time for Tams. You have your hand up there, so I just want to honor your presence. You have a, would you like to share something?
Yeah. Yes, thank you so much for this and for all that you provide. It's such a wealth of knowledge and wisdom. My question just is really simple. It relates to something you said during the beginning of this, when you talked about, you know, 40 years ago or so, you were limited to rice and beans and et cetera, and you were really healthy because of it. And I've tried the raw diet, and I've tried, you know, making a lot of different foods, simple and fancy vegan foods. And now I would like to try, like, going back to a really inexpensive vegan lifestyle. Could you expound upon what your diet consisted of in the 70s a little bit more?
Well, it was before there was any processed vegan foods, so-called vegan foods, really. I mean, there really wasn't anything. There was, like, you could buy this powder, a soy milk powder, and you could make, you know, disgusting soy milk. That was about it. And I think there was some company, I think it was Loma Linda, they had these meat in a can kind of a thing that was supposedly vegan. But nobody ever wanted to eat any of that stuff. So they had this thing called Love Burgers at one point, which you could mix up and somehow with water and you cook it. But basically there wasn't anything. So it was kind of like hippie food back in the 70s was big pot of rice or cornmeal and some lentils. And then some veggies, you know, we put that in too. And I think, and then of course we started to hear about tofu and started eating some tofu. I remember we used to make it ourselves in the beginning because you couldn't buy it anywhere. And then for a while I made tempeh too. If you couldn't buy tempeh, I started making tempeh. But, I think it was making, you know, you had to kind of make things from scratch, but quite honestly, the way Madeline and I eat now is exactly that. That's what we do. I mean, we don't buy hardly anything that comes out of a factory. It's we have a garden, so we grow a lot of our own greens, but we buy veggies and fruits, and then we buy large quantities. Like there's a great company called Azure, A-Z-U-R-E. Do you know about Azure? You should check it out. Azure. Their website is Azure. What? Azure Online. Madeline, what is it? Azure.
Standard.
A-Z-U-R-E.
Online, or what's the website? Oh, you don't remember.
Standard.
Anyway, standard. Just look it up. Standard. Azure Standard. And the neat thing is it's all over the country. And they have really good prices on bulk. So we buy like 50 pounds of rice or 25 pounds of rice, 50 pounds of oats, 25 pounds of spelt, whatever. You can buy large quantities. And what they do is once a month, this truck will come to your area and everybody goes to the parking lot and the truck guy comes and he opens up the back of the truck. He goes, okay, here we got, for Jones, we got this, for Smith, we got that, for Tuttle, what do you got, you know, and you just kind of get your food and then you go home. It's really cool. It's like the good old days when they come into town, you know, once a month and you get your knife sharpened or I don't know, whatever, you buy stuff. So, it's kind of like that, but the prices are really good. I mean, and you can get organic stuff, or you can even get like organic apples, organic potatoes.
Wow.
You can get all the grains, legumes, all the nut butters, you know, all that stuff. If, you know, you can get pretty much everything, and the prices are much lower. But it's just once a month, typically, and you got to drive there and pick it up. But, yeah, it's kind of a neat thing. And there's also other, you know, Madeline knows all these different online places. We pretty much live out in the middle of nowhere. So we have one store here that we go to, and they sell hardware and they sell food. And so she goes and buys the food and I go and buy the hardware and then we go home. Once a week we go to the local store here. And otherwise we get everything there. And we have a farmer's market too, so we get some stuff at the farmer's market. But we grow a lot ourselves. And then we buy online through either through Azure or through what are some of the ones, Madeline, you use?
Of what?
Food. TerraSol is a good one.
Vitacost
is a good one. Oh, yeah, it's in the book. If you get either Food for Freedom or the World Peace Way and you go to resources in the back, we've got a list of all the places you can buy our organic vegan food at a really good price. We buy in bulk. We buy large quantities and then just store it. It's much, you know, that's because that's what we eat. We're not raw. We're maybe... You know, we buy sprouts. I mean, we buy, you know, like alfalfa, all these different things, and we make sprouts. But we have so many greens now, we don't really need sprouts. But we're maybe 50% raw, maybe. I don't know. But I think it's good to eat grains, and legumes, you know, like lentils and split peas and chickpeas, whatever, sometimes. It's like you say, it's much less expensive. I mean, people say going vegan is so expensive. It really, it's not. It's actually a lot less expensive if you use whole plant-based foods. And I think Organic, of course, is non-negotiable for us. We absolutely will never buy anything unless it's organic, which is more expensive, but ultimately I think it's much cheaper in the long run. So hopefully that was helpful. And we should actually wrap it up here. Okay. I think you said thank you. Yeah, it was a little muffled. It's always good to see you all and to share. And we've come to the end of our hour here. Those of you who are in the World Peace Diet circle, we'll see you on the third Thursday. Otherwise, we'll see you next month, hopefully. And let's, Madeline, let's come together and say our closing prayer that we say the one that we all know. Here she is.
Right.
She's getting a lot supper. Okay, so it begins with the words compassion. Compassion circles the world, for all beings everywhere. Again, compassion circles
the earth,
for all beings everywhere. And one more time. Compassion circles the earth, for all beings everywhere. Bless you all. Thanks so much for your beautiful presence, and we'll go forth and multiply the message to all living beings. See you next time.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.